And that concludes tonight's podcast.
Okay, oh, folks. Jesus H. Christ. All right, welcome to the No Mind Podcast, such as it is.
My name is indicated by the...
We're doing a second go-round of the Drunken Podcast. Anyway, welcome to the No Mind Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you have any questions, please post them on the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or send me a message at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Before we get going on the topic, I just want to introduce our guest. It's old home week here on the podcast. So to start with, Bob, welcome back.
Thanks. This is getting boring, but I'll take it on again.
Wow.
Jeez, yeah.
Jeez, don't hold back there.
Let's set the precedence for today's podcast right there.
Nine people just turned the podcast off. Darren Bell's back on the podcast. Hey, Darren, how are you, man?
I'm happy to be here, and I'm not bored.
And Bob's an asshole. Nice.
Fuck you, Darren.
And Lenny.
Suck up. What a suck up.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's sucking up to me on the podcast. I don't think so. And Lenny. Hey, Len, how are you, man?
I'm only here because my probation officer said I had to do it.
It's community service.
No, I'm really ecstatic to be here. I'm enjoying this.
Ecstatic? This is going to be a hell of a thing to edit. All right, folks. Okay, so today's topic, I'll be perfectly honest, folks. We got to Thursday and I had nothing, knowing I had a podcast to post in 5 days. So I came up with the idea of letting the guests come up with the topics. So the general premise of today's podcast is we've each come up with two questions to ask. We'll choose randomly who's going to go first. They'll ask a question and we'll just go around the table and everyone will answer it. So let's start with Darren, you want to go? Oh, before we go, sorry. I do this every time, and I know it gets old, but I like to do it anyway. Bob, do you have anything you want to say before we get going?
Oh, no. This is becoming a routine for me now. So, like, it's, okay, we're doing a podcast on Friday, and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. So I'm way more comfortable now than I was at the beginning. So anyway, thanks.
Darren, anything to add before we hit the topic?
No, just on your thing there, I don't think I'm... Like, even though when you give us topics, there seems to be a sense of nervousness and apprehension and is the topic good? Am I well-versed enough into it? And then I thought, oh, geez, we get to pick our own questions. That'll be way better. It's not any better. You're still trying to figure out, is this question any good? Am I getting anything out of it? Not really worried about the listener. My questions, I actually want to know these answers.
Okay, Lenny, anything you want to throw in before we get going?
Firstly, that's the most astute I've heard Darren speaking in a long time. And secondly, we've got to be positive. Bob's gone from bored to this is becoming routine for him, so that's good as well.
Darren puts the ass in astute.
But yeah, no, it's... if one thing, but, Mitch, you definitely get us thinking when you throw a topic out because, you know, depending on how much notice you get, you're going through moments of you're going, Jesus... How am I going to answer this, or what am I going to do? But yeah, it's really good. It gets the mind thinking, so excellent. Keep it going.
And actually, that's why I like tonight's topics, because we've all come up with a couple of questions to ask each other. Nobody knows what the questions are, so all these answers are going to be on the fly, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. Okay, so let's get to it. Darren, your first question. What do you got?
Okay, now, the first question is actually, there's about three or four questions in the first question, but it all pertains to the same thing. So it'll sound like more than one question, but it's all gearing toward kind of the same general topic I'm looking at. And it works out because you guys either own, run, or teach at a dojo right now, or have owned, ran, or taught at a dojo before. And I myself was a co-owner of a place out in Victoria in British Columbia, and it turned out to be a complete shambles. My first question was regarding the owning or running of a gym or a dojo, martial arts studio, whatever you want to call it. The very first question is, does it or did it ruin or hinder your actual love for the martial arts? in a sense that, like, sometimes if you're doing something just for the love of it and then you make a career out of it, suddenly you lose that love because now there's so much more involved in running a dojo with advertising, collecting dues, listening to parents, dealing with people that you don't want to bother training, dealing with people that aren't training properly and all that kind of stuff. Does that actually take away from what you originally started out training for?
Wow. Man, that's a good question.
That's a great question. If I can, Lenny's the only one of us who currently and has for the last decade or so run a club full time. So let's start with Lenny and we'll go to Bob after. Lenny, go ahead.
How long have you got?
Yeah.
Jesus.
2 hours.
I think you've probably described every feeling I've had with it, Darren, in that when I trained at Forest, obviously you go to somebody else's dojo. And when I started at Forest, there was no real full-time dojos. They were all just part-time clubs. I started out as that and gave it a good 10 to 15 years before I went full-time. Make the transition from student to teacher was a whole, it hit everything at you. As you said, it kills your passion sometimes, and other times it can make you more passionate than ever. And I found it has kind of come in cycles in that I would go through a certain phase of your teaching, and you're getting beginners in, you're getting people improving. Okay, you get caught in a little bit of a routine in that you're covering the same material constantly with beginners, and then you get those to progress, and that ignites your interest a bit more because they're making the progression. And then you might get a tournament that comes up and you do really well in that and really ignites your interest for it. You really want to go again. You're seeing other people of other standards. And then as you know yourself, guys, we've invited other styles into our dojo. So you're seeing those guys as well and you go, okay, I want to learn this. And we try and incorporate it into our own teaching. So it's a bit of column A and column B there in that, yes, you can go through periods of awful mundane kind of, oh, Jesus Christ, do I have to do this? The parent or the student who's just breaking your heart constantly. And then you get the few gems that come in or the few moments or you meet instructors or so on that just kicks you on another level. And it makes you realize that, yeah, this is why I'm doing this. I can honestly say I've never gone through the door of the dojo thinking I'm going through a day's work. Yeah, I've gone in saying, Jesus, I have to face this guy or that girl. But it's never seemed like a task. And the positives far outweigh the negatives in my mind.
Bob, you ran the club in Toronto for a while, quite a few years before I joined, and then we ran it sort of together. What's your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I want to say I really loved Lenny's answer. It brought me back to those years. And to get things straight, I have never run a club full-time. This was in my spare time after work. We'd go down and teach for a few hours on weeknights, so don't get the wrong idea. I've never been nearly as into it as Lenny, but everything he said strikes home for me. The original question was, what was the original question?
Did it ruin or enhance your right. kind of love for the art or even the desire to train?
The fact that you own the club means you're invested in it, like, completely emotionally, and it the answer is enhanced. I look back so fondly on those years, especially when we had to close the club and the emotions that came from the kids when we announced it. It was obvious that we had touched them and that they truly loved what we were doing. And when you go up as a teacher and you do your best to get across why you love this so much and hope that they pick up the techniques enough that they start to love it as much as you did, that's a real emotional investment, and when it pays off, it's wonderful. Next person. Oh, and I wanted to bring up the fact that Mitch mentioned while we were talking about this pre-recording, if we each ask two questions and there's four of us, there's going to be 32 responses, so we really got to try and keep our responses short. But anyway, that's my shortest response to that question. Next.
Okay, I'm gonna take a shot at Darren's question. Like I said, I haven't run a club full-time, certainly. I do a fair bit of teaching, and my experience with running a club is even less broad than Bob's because I came in, I don't know, 5 years after Bob started the club. I can't remember the chronology of it all. I'm going to link back to what Lenny was talking about. Day to day, you go through those emotional up and downs. I don't feel like doing this. I have no I'm just not in it today. This particular experience that happened today is kind of killing my enthusiasm. taking a step back and looking at the overall perspective, it absolutely enhanced my love of the martial arts. And there have been a number of students I can think of, three or four off the top of my head, that have been so fulfilling to have a part in their growth and in their progress. I can't imagine not having had that experience, and I'm eternally grateful for Bob to allowing me to be a part of that club, because it was the closest I'll ever get to actually running a club. So yeah, there you go. Darren, answer your own question.
Yeah, see, I what I found is a lot of the things you all just said, but I found when the club finally went under and then I ended up joining another club, that sparked my interest a lot more than owning the club and having to go through the day-to-day training and all that. Like when I could actually go back as a student, that kind of invigorated my love of the arts. Whereas I found personally that it now, while I did enjoy teaching and I enjoyed some of the things that you pick up along the way, just by the sheer nature of teaching, you're obviously dissecting the techniques and the moves and stuff a lot more than you would if you were just a student. But I just found when the business was done and I could go back to being a student, that to me was way more entertaining than running a club. So that's what sparked the question. I was just wondering how everybody else felt about that same kind of situation.
You know, this whole question has brought up an entire podcast topic on itself.
Can I say a quick thing there, Mitch?
Sure, yeah, please.
See, without dragging it out too much.
Yeah.
Just, you're making the point there, Darren, it just sparked your interest more when you became a student. So I don't think it's necessarily the running of a club. It's teaching a class can do that, because when you're teaching a class, you know what's coming and you know what you're doing. You've got your lesson plan set out. So there's nothing, not saying there's nothing for you to learn, but you're not picking up new skills. Whereas you go to another club, you're an open book for them. So it's not necessarily the whole running of a club side of it. It's teaching versus being a student, really.
Probably, yeah.
Okay, next question. Bob, you're up.
If you could do it all over again, which one martial art would you train in and in which school? Mixed martial arts doesn't count because that's cheating. It's mixed. Just one style of one martial art. And if you wouldn't train in a martial art, nothing wrong with that, say why that would be your thing too.
I'm going to throw a little thing here. Whoever asks the question gets to choose who answers first. So, Bob, who do you?
Okay.
Go ahead.
That's cool. Lenny.
I think I would go to one of the more traditional Okinawan styles of karate, because it has intrigued me that Kenpo and, dare I say, when it morphed to American Kenpo, lost an awful lot of the traditional stuff, which in my dealings with the likes of you guys and guys I have training with me now, I just prefer it. I would, if I can, two-pronged approach on that, also like do something with grappling involved, because I think it's a big game of chess that just intrigues me. And I'm going really quick with this, if I was to pick a club to go to, I would have to go to you guys in your heyday in Canada, just because the stories I heard and your reminiscence. It sounds like it was absolute hoot. between the crazy stuff and the really strict stuff, yeah, to be a fly in the wall and take part in that, 100%, that's what I'd like to do. There's a quick answer for you now.
That's actually, I'm actually touched by that in some arrogant, weird way. Anyway.
I know, it's true.
Bob, who's next?
Oh, do I choose the entire order? Yeah. Let's go Darren.
That's a tough one because, like, I think, like, I'm with Lenny on the grappling thing. When I got into grappling, it was just like a whole new world. And I thought, Jesus, that's amazing. And when you first posed the question, my first response was going to be, I wish I had done the grappling earlier. Because it was there and I saw it, but there was no clubs teaching it. So it took me a long time. And when there were a couple clubs teaching it, because I'd already been training in various martial arts up till then, I kind of had that ego thing where I didn't want to go somewhere where I was starting at the beginning and I was just going to get my ass kicked.
Yep.
So that took me a long time before I made that step. And then I went through the years of getting my ass kicked until I was actually kind of holding my own in that particular style. But at the same time, I don't think I would have changed anything that I had done up until that point, because I think all that kind of stuff kind of creates the character. And that's what maybe sparked a love of grappling, was because I had invested so much time in the other things before that. And so, looking back, I don't know if I would have changed anything. I think it all kind of worked out for a reason, and you kind of build the character along the way. Yeah, you hit a few rocky bumps. I might have went to a different club at one point and not gone to one other club, but overall, I think I would have kept the same path, or maybe just did things a bit differently, a bit earlier, and some of them lost years where you kind of lost interest and got into other things. I wish I still had a stuck with it through there instead of taking that break. But again, I might have needed that break in order to go back and take it more seriously. So that's a tough question, because it's like anything when you're thinking about going back, you know?
For sure. Mitch?
My knee-jerk reaction is to say judo. I loved judo, and
I forgot about judo. Anyway,
I fucking hate going upside down. I fucking hated judo.
Darren,
every time I got flipped, I hated it.
I always remember you trying to learn a shoulder roll. Frustrated you got.
I like flipping people, don't get me wrong. But unfortunately, you have to be the recipient. And that's always wrecked my buzz about judo.
The thing is, it's hard for me to admit this. I started out in karate, obviously, and got my... I think I was Shoden or Nidan when I started in judo. So it's hard for me to admit that maybe karate's not my first... Well, it was my first love, but maybe not my favorite. The thing I love about judo... Sorry, this is going to take a second to explain properly. The thing I don't like about karate is when you practice a technique, when you work a technique, you don't know whether it works or not. And so much of karate is done solo. Yes, there are lines and you spar, but there's also kata and there's also solo practicing and blah, 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 blah.
Try practicing uchi uke and then trying to figure out if that's going to work.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I can do an uchi uke in the air 1,000 times. I can do it. But without someone in front of me throwing a punch, or even standing in front of an inanimate object and performing an uchi uke on it to get some sort of resistance against it, you don't really have an idea of how effective that technique is. Whereas judo, by its nature, by the nature of the training, you know whether it works, because it's virtually all partner work. When I go in to do a throw, if I don't break the balance properly, if I don't fit in properly, if I don't turn properly, if I don't finish properly, the throw won't work. I know immediately whether or not my throw is going to work. Plus, it's got the added advantage or the added draw of grappling. That's where my love of grappling started, and I love grappling because of judo. To me, judo has all the stuff that I love about the martial arts. So my answer would be, sorry, go ahead.
I was thinking of something. It wasn't an argument, but it was. There's a term for when you train with a partner and you're always doing something. I can't remember what it is. I think that would depend on the club you were training at, because you could train at a karate club where everything they did was with a partner.
True.
So then you would know whether the blocks or the techniques work. So it just, by the very nature of the place we trained at, there was a lot of lines. Not with a partner, where you're just going up and down the room throwing kicks and stuff. And as you said, you don't really know if it's going to work. So sure. I think if I was running the school now, there'd be almost zero individual stuff. It would always be with somebody else for that same reason that you just described.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I think the practical application of the technique is, and practical application has a pretty broad definition, but just standing in front of someone throwing punches and kicks and getting blocked and blocking and all that stuff adds a level of credibility to your own sense of your technique. And I think judo inherently, as an art form, that is more built into it than it is in karate necessarily. And again, obviously I'm speaking anecdotally, but to answer the question, it'd be judo for sure. Which judo club? I don't know. I've only trained at one. I don't have that breadth of experience with other judo clubs to know which one I would train at. So that's it. That's my answer. Bob.
First of all, I take really to heart the fact that I was brought up at the Jiushin Karate Club. So we have to try. It's hard to separate our nostalgic, feelings for where we were trained as opposed to the martial art itself. Mitch, thank you for reminding me about judo as a martial art. I forgot it was one. I love it also, but I'm also sort of convoluted with my love for kendo. I can't help but remember how much I fell in love with it at the dojo I was at the Etobicoke Kendo Club at the Etobicoke Olympium, which was a world-class kendo dojo, and the training was unbelievable. Aikido, I'm in love with Aikido still, my old age, just for the aesthetics of it. It's hard to put into words. It's not practical, but it's beautiful. And it's why practice a martial art, just because it feels and looks good. I can't put it into words, but there's that. And capoeira. Jesus Christ.
So every martial art you've ever tried.
Yeah, pretty much. but okay, I got to name one, and I'm going to say, if I was young, if I was to do it all over again, it would... I think it would be kendo.
You know, next question. Well, hang on a second.
Oh, sorry.
I forgot about all those martial arts. I have a very limited experience with capoeira. I have no experience with kendo. And I have not quite as limited experience with Aikido, but very limited. I might want to throw Aikido in there. Wow, it's hard. That, man, so much of so many martial arts appeals to me.
Yeah,
it's really hard to choose just one.
Aikido, I don't know. Yeah, it's a tie. Yeah. I changed my claim.
Okay, Lenny, time for your question.
Okay, brace yourselves.
This is going to be life changing.
That's the what Irish.
The airspeed and wind velocity of a sparrow.
That's an Irishman's foreplay. That's great. Brace yourself.
Yeah.
All right, go.
Okay, so. We preclude this with a little statement, and then the question will follow. So, obviously, in recent years, MMA and UFC, in particular, has become really, really prevalent. It's on, it's everywhere. It's on TV. It's you name it. Most fights in the octagon will follow kind of two paths. One is two guys slugging it out fist to fist with the occasional kick, or else it'll go to ground. One of them favors the ground, or both of them favor the ground. Do you think that MMA and what it's become in recent years has taken away from martial arts as a whole, in that it now looks like a two-trick pony, in that you've got grapplers and you've got guys who strike with their hands, and it detracts from what we would have learned from traditional practitioners of a martial art, and that people who look at that go, well, all those techniques you learn are bullshit, they don't work, because here's a guy striking each other, he's a black belt, there's nobody blocking stuff, they're getting pummeled. So, wow. As a whole, has the birth of MMA totally diluted, or has it enhanced?
Great question.
Martial arts.
Okay, Lenny, you're choosing who answers first.
You, Mitch.
Oh, crap. Okay. Okay, I think that MMA and UFC and all that stuff has done a great deal of good for the martial arts generally. I think it's brought it to the forefront in a way that it's never been brought to the forefront before. I think more people are interested in the martial arts because of it, and I can't see that as anything but a good thing. Having said that, all of the traditional art forms are not represented in MMA. Kata in the context of MMA is meaningless, and so it should be. Kata doesn't help you become a better fighter. Podcast topic. I think that the traditional martial arts suffer at the hands of the popularity of the UFC. Am I anywhere close to answering your question?
You are, but I would add to that, you're saying it enhances martial arts, but is it just enhancing striking and grappling and everything else? Is like, you talk to somebody
okay,
in
well,
MMA,
let me ask.
And you just going back to what Bob said, who mentioned kendo, he mentioned judo, he mentioned aikido. You ask anyone who's an MMA fan, they're going to go, huh?
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean when I say that UFC MMA has brought the martial arts as a concept more into the public eye than it's ever been before. But when we talk about traditional martial arts or non-practical, and I will put Aikido in non-practical, I'll put Kendo in non-practical in terms of just two guys getting into a ring and fighting each other. They're non-existent in that vein because they have nothing to do with that sort of framework. You know, this is a tough one for me. I'm gonna bow out of this after saying what I've said, I think, five times now.
Derek, next. You're next.
In going on the internet and seeing, even just in Ireland, what different clubs are around Ireland and the different martial arts and traditions and stuff like that, I haven't noticed that anything has suffered. So I think the same reason back in the day Where someone might do kendo, somebody else does capoeira, somebody else does karate, somebody else does judo, and you would all talk amongst yourself, well, who would be better at this, or why did you pick judo, and everybody would have their own reasons. And I think MMA is just a different form of martial art. So if you're getting into MMA, and whether it's a one-trick pony or whether it's an amalgamation of enough arts that help you do combat in that situation, if that's your goal or that's your interest, then so be it. But if your interest is still in something else, then you're going to train elsewhere. And I think if you looked out and there was only MMA clubs, I think your point would be that other clubs might have been suffering. But again, if you go on the internet right now, if you just pick Dublin, all them traditional martial arts are still there and the clubs are still running. There are people that still want to train in those arts, and I haven't checked them out, but I'm assuming there's still instructors and clubs that are still teaching them. So I don't think it's anybody suffered or anything. I think it's just a different form, and if that's what you're into, that's what you go into, and if you're into something else, you go to something else, kind of the way it's always been done.
How about you, Bob?
In a sense, every one of these martial arts that we're talking about, all the classical ones, started out trying to systematize a way of being practical in combat. Karate did, jiu-jitsu, which turned into judo, did. Kendo was sword fighting, how to deal with swords. We'll make an exception with Aikido. Capoeira was the, you know, Brazilian national thing for that. So, in a sense, everybody was trying to be practical. And in that same sense, MMA is just coming out as the top one these days. It's the winner so far. I don't know where martial arts could go as far as practicality is concerned, unless MMA loosens their rules about fish hooks and groin kicks and eye gouges. So in that sense, MMA is great. But in the other sense, I think it's a more aesthetic, like if you appeal to people's aesthetics, they will come to different ideas of what they want to do. And in that sense, everybody who's talked so far is absolutely right. You'll do whatever you want and what appeals to you. And that's, of course, absolutely cool, too. The end.
I really want to touch on something Bob said, because this is something I feel very strongly about. I believe that martial arts and the popularity of martial arts is cyclical. Back in the 70s, it was all about karate, and everyone was into karate. And then there was a shift. It went to taekwondo for quite a while. That was the big thing. And then it shifted again. Right now, the big thing is Brazilian jiu-jitsu and MMA. I think, I don't know if we can all agree with this, but my perspective is, right now, karate isn't the big thing. Neither is taekwondo. They still have their place, but they're not at the forefront. Right now, MMA and BJJ are the big things in terms of popularity. Who knows what will happen in 5 years, but I can almost promise you this. In 10 years, Brazilian jiu-jitsu will be where karate is right now. People aren't doing it as much because there's this other thing that has captured everybody's imagination.
Yeah, I think as well, and you've hit on it there, Mitch, kind of so many years ago, karate was the thing, taekwondo. It's the media training and the circus training that comes with it. I mean,
exactly.
And we all watch movies in the day and we all want to be Bruce Lee or Jackie Chan and so on. Now you've got UFC on demand. The bit that disappoints me about it is, it's from my point of view as a martial artist, a huge side of the respect and traditional side has been buried, because obviously it's a show to promote it. There's huge amounts of money behind it, and now it's trash talk as much as you can and build up the hype. That side of it for me disappoints me on the purest martial artist that's in
that. That's a whole episode in my mind.
Yeah.
Every one of these questions is a whole episode. So. Okay.
Hey, Mitch, are we officially halfway through this?
I've got one question to ask, and then we'll be halfway
through. Oh, right. Okay.
Okay, so this is an incredibly egocentric question to ask. I started doing these podcasts about 9 podcasts ago, which is 18 weeks, and I've spoken to all of you individually about them, and I'm really curious why you guys continue to be so generous with your time about these. Like, I know what this podcast does for me. I'm curious. I can only assume that you guys are enjoying this. Because I'm certainly not paying you. So yet. I'm yet exactly. Once the sponsors come rolling in, guys,
look out, Joe Rogan.
Exactly, we'll be counting those dollars.
There will be a knock on the door.
But I'm honestly curious about what motivates you guys to be on these pods. And I'm sorry, this is sort of, it's not really martial arts related. Like I said, this is a very podcast ego-centric question. But my God, I'm curious. So, Darren.
Well, you said it's not martial arts oriented, but the very first podcast I was on was the Drunken Podcast. And I think I explained on that podcast why I was interested in it, and which still stands for subsequent podcasts afterward, is that there's not a lot of opportunities where I get to sit down with someone and have a couple of drinks and discuss the martial arts. It's not the circles I hang out in. If you actually train in martial arts, you go do the class and then you go home. There's not that crossover where you get to go out for drinks and have these conversations. So I enjoy coming on and talking to other people that obviously have a lifetime of experiences and a lot of stuff that I'm interested in hearing. So for me, it's kind of an outlet where I can come on. I don't really care what I say. I'm interested in hearing what everybody else has to say on these topics, and I take it on board, and it can change my mind. It can help me reminisce about things, reinvigorate certain things that I had long since forgotten about, stuff like that. So I get that type of enjoyment out of it. So that's why I agree to come on every time. I don't care what the topics are. I know it's going to be entertaining, and I know somebody's going to say stuff that makes me think about it and revisit things or think, geez, I never thought of it that way. So I like getting the different perspectives of everything.
Lenny.
Darren's kind of stolen my answer. No. The one thing I kind of, when I went full-time martial arts practitioner, and the one thing I was hell-bent on from day one was that I was going to invite and embrace as many different styles and teachings of martial arts as I could, because I'd become a black belt in my style. There had to be more out there. So with that comes someone's experience, comes their knowledge, comes their war stories and whatever else. And so when you open this can of worms up, exactly what Darren says, it comes on and it gets you talking with people like-minded and maybe not so like-minded, and it really makes you think about things, and it might change your perception on things. I mean, you might learn a lot more, and I mean, we all have a bundle of laughs along the way, and it is pure, and the time just flies by on each one, and you go away from each one going, Jesus, I could have said so much more on that, and you're thinking about stuff for the next one. I've never been in a position where I go, oh, do you know what, I'm not bloody listening to that this week. I mean, a lot of my students, you know, it's not, you're kind of waiting, you're looking forward to it, and I've got some of my own students are starting to tune into it as well, which I might have a few guests for you with them as well. Like what Darren says, you don't have that ability to talk martial arts with your normal peers at home, because you train with them and you go home, your normal circle of friends and whoever your family, they don't get it as such, because they don't have the experience, the knowledge that you've had. So it's an avenue to explore more and learn more and just share stuff with each other. Yeah, and it's brilliant.
Bob?
I'm doing other stuff now. I've retired from all this shit, but it's really fun to look back and be nostalgic. And my main thing is just having a laugh with you guys. If you had a guest on who I didn't really click with, it wouldn't be fun. This is fun, and that's the reason why I do it.
You know what it is for me? I repress about 90% of my emotional responses to stuff.
He does, folks. He's not lying about that.
And I kind of just got tired of not being able to have a venue through which I can just say what I think. And that's really, in its simplest form, why I started these podcasts. I just wanted to give myself, and I can only assume that other people have that same restriction in their life. And you guys have kind of said it in a different way, but there just isn't the venue or the platform to come out and go, look, this is what I think about something, without judgment and without people pointing at you and going, oh, you're an idiot, or you're a dinosaur, or why do you think that? That's ridiculous. Having a platform to say what you think in the company of people who, even if they disagree, and God knows we've all disagreed plenty, but you still disagree in a framework of respect and a framework of understanding, and I can't imagine a more freeing thing. I'm going to start crying in a second.
Fed it. Hey, Mitch, can we break for a bathroom/beer break?
Yeah, I got to pour a drink, so absolutely. Okay, guys, I'm going to...
I was just trying to figure out how I could slip out unnoticed and mix another drink. Bob took the reins on that one and saved the day.
I'm just going to let it keep recording while we all pee/pour a drink, and when we're ready to start again, we'll start again. Okay. All right.
Giddy up.
Okay, back. We're folks.
okay, folks, for back. We're...
What's the officer problem?
I'm under the affluence of alcohol.
All right, we'll try that again.
And now we return to professional show business.
This is why we're not getting paid.
God damn it. Professional boshiness.
Okay, folks, we're back. So we're going to start the second round of questions now. Darren, go ahead with the question.
Mine still pertains to the club thing because I guess it was a two-part question. This one I think we'll get a good laugh at, and we could talk for hours about it or keep it general just as something kind of comical. But what I was going to go back with again for people that have done a certain amount of years of teaching or had actually run their own school, what are the best and worst memories from that sort of situation?
Wow. Now,
whether it was a training thing, whether it was something in particular that happened, whether it was a catastrophe, or whether it was just something that was really inspiring that you walked away from, like even what Bob touched on there earlier about the kids. That to me, that sounds like one of the best memories, that you'd walk away with that kind of memory. So I'm just wondering, what would be a quick best and worst memory in those situations? I'll go
we don't even get time to think about this.
Well, Bob, you're first.
That's how conversations work.
Welcome to human interaction.
Who's up? I'm up. Holy cow. Yeah.
Only awesome. Because you had already touched on that one memory, so that's
right. You're okay. Stuck with it. Best. Worst. As soon as my mind says worst, I think injury. And as soon as I think injury, I think a child getting injured. No child has been injured under my tenure, so no problem there. Actually, it's true that we did well for ourselves. We were lucky. No serious injuries during the club. I don't think so, right, Mitch? There was a solar plexus kick every now and then.
Well, there's the usual stuff that happens, but right. I don't think anyone got seriously injured.
You guys must have had a good club because I've got injured at every single club I've ever trained at.
Most recently mine.
Yes, that I'm still recovering from.
Worst memory must be more emotional. That's a really hard question to answer off the cuff, man. Best memory?
It doesn't happen. All right. You can Darren, walk away and wake up tomorrow and think of something different. But
yeah.
Off the cuff, I get it. What sticks out in your mind.
But Darren, what you touched on earlier with the kids at the club, when we announced that the club had to close, there was one little girl who was rather emotional about it. And I thought that epitomized, or not epitomized, but it was touching, her reaction to us closing the club. So that was, best memory. Okay, got it. It was the black belt test that we had at that same club.
Oh, my God. Poor Blake.
How old was Blake? 14?
14 or 15.
Darren, I shit you not, the black belt test we put him through was the hardest black belt test I've ever seen. And I'm glad that we put him through that. It was... Now that it's over, I know he's proud looking back on the fact that he went through it. And I'm proud that we put him through it and he got through it. And I'm proud of him. And I'm proud of the standards that we upheld during it. And that's a memory I'll always, always have in my heart.
I just want to add a little bit to that because I was at that grading. I consider myself fairly hardcore. Bob was taking him through the last bit of his grading, and I'm sitting there going, oh my God, Bob, you're going to kill this kid. Like this kid's not going to survive this grading. And without a word of a lie, we brought him to attention at the end of his grading. There were some words spoken. He was in a natural stance, actually, and there were some words spoken. I don't remember what. Brought him to attention. He bowed. The grading was over. He collapsed.
I knew that was coming.
I have so much respect for that kid for staying on his feet as long as he did. That grading whipped his ass.
What a feeling when you see a kid, coming to tears, when you see a kid do something so hard on themselves and do it, and actually do it. It brings to mind another kid, decades earlier.
This is from the Lima's Club?
Yeah, who I had stand in a horse stance and was... Did I have everybody standing in a horse stance?
Yeah, it was the whole class.
And I was admonishing them to stay down as long as you could, and this kid lasted longer than anybody else, and tears were coming. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, go on to somebody else because I'm a wreck.
Darren, who's next?
You're talking. You might as well go.
About, I don't know, 4 years ago. This is a pretty recent one. A friend of mine has a son. They lived in Peterborough back then. They don't anymore. But he has a son. And at the time, the kid was probably around 17, 18. And this kid was getting into a fair bit of trouble. He was a lot of brawling, a lot of drinking, blah, blah, blah. So we talked about him, and I suggested, look, maybe this kid might benefit from some training. I think it certainly couldn't hurt. Give him a little focus, give him a little bit of discipline. So I started training with this kid, just him and I, private classes, probably for, it was months we trained together. And it happened that one of the Jushin tournaments was coming up shortly after we were training together. So I trained this kid with the intention of him being in that tournament.
What rank?
Oh, he was a raw beginner. He was a white belt. Like, he had never formally trained before.
Got it.
So we did some kata, but we concentrated predominantly on point fighting. And, now I'm going to get all weepy. He went into this tournament, and there must have been, tournaments, always the white and yellow belt divisions have the most competitors. And I think, I can't speak to it, but I know there were at least 10 or 12 competitors in his division. And he took first place. And I don't think I've ever been prouder of a student in my entire life. I walked up to him after he won, and I grabbed him, and I kissed him on the cheek, and I went, ah. And it wasn't so much that he won. It was that this kid had so many issues and so many problems, and he managed to focus it all and do that well with that little bit of training. I was so, so proud of that kid.
Hey, what's your worst? You didn't do the worst.
Neither did you.
Yeah, okay. I did.
I've got a worst for you. You ready? Right. There was a blue belt kid at the club years and years ago. And I'm not going to mention any names. And I was a reasonably new black belt. And she was testing for her brown belt. And the head instructor of the club came up to me. He said, I don't think she's ready for her brown belt. I want you to take her through the test. But if she does well during her grading, I'm going to have to give her her belt. So I want you to make this test so difficult that she doesn't perform well. Now, I remember in my head at the time agreeing with him. I didn't think she was ready for her brown belt either. So I said, okay, no problem. And I remember making that test so difficult, so hard. And she was in tears 45 minutes in. And I made the test as difficult as it needed to be so that she wouldn't perform well, so that she didn't get her brown belt. That was tough. I liked this kid a lot. I just thought, in terms of her best movement forward, this was the right thing to do. And then the head instructor passed her anyway. And that just gutted me. I had just caused all this pain and anguish for no good reason, because the whole point of doing it was that she wouldn't pass, because I thought that was important for her progress. And then he gave it to her anyway. That has to be my worst memory in the context of any kind of teaching. So please go on to somebody else. I'm the
only one left, am I?
Yep, we're going there, Lynn.
Best has got to be probably... It's a tie for two. One is very short and simple. It's the night I got my show done. Yeah. So just, I think we can all vouch for that one. But that's a bit self-indulgent. The other one would be my first time having gone full-time martial arts to take kids into an international competition, and we hosted one, and we walked out on the floor to an arena that day with just short of 200 competitors that all trained under my flag.
Jesus. And
yeah, there was 75 entrants from the British team, and we had 192. Darren was part of that team, actually.
With uniforms and everything.
Yeah, yeah, full customised gi for the day, and we walked out to the team from Rocky, and we had national anthems and so on, and it was just, I stood there, and there was about 300, maybe, spectators, and the place was just electric, and I stood there, and I was nearly an emotional wreck. So that's got to be the highest. That's got to be the highest one. There's kind of a second prong on that. There was an individual involved in the opposition who turned out not to be a nice guy. And my second favorite memory of that was when Darren hit him. I hasten to say, by accident, he didn't block Darren's punch. So that's kind of a two prong.
It's his fault. It's on him.
And my worst is probably the worst that any of us could ever experience, and I won't go into too much because it cuts to the bone too much. I had a family of four kids, three boys and a girl, and one of them at the age of 10 caught a rare virus and died. And it didn't get much lower than that. That was we have an annual award for this kid that the parents present every year, just for it doesn't get much lower than that one.
Way to kill the mood there, Len.
Yeah, definitely gonna go. I'm gonna go to Darren next. That's worse than mine.
It's mine too. That's worse than mine too. Jeez,
Darren, quickly rescue the situation.
I know. I don't get to. That was the premise of today's topic. You ask the questions, but you don't get to answer your own question.
Everybody's answered.
We've
their
all
own
answered
question.
Our questions.
Have they?
Yes.
Oh yes.
You even answered round one.
Follow along.
I didn't. I didn't answer my own question.
Okay, you're answering this one.
Shit, I wasn't prepared for that.
Hold on, may I quote you? This is the art of conversation. You don't have to prepare.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's what a conversation is.
Jeez, I don't know. Like, I don't think there was any like horrendous memories that would be a worst. I just remember a lot of things. Again, going back to when you were running a club, and I remember one time. I have my own style when I'm teaching. That's just the way it goes. And I didn't think anything of it. And a kid came in for class one day, and there was only like three or four kids in the class. And I said something, and he halts the class, and he goes, "Oh, excuse me, sensei." And I'm like, "What?" And he goes, "My parents said you can't speak to me like that anymore." And I just froze.
Wow.
I'm like, "What?
Wow.
Did you just say that to me?"
Whoa.
And I was about to berate him even further, but then I thought, "Oh, wait a second. Maybe I'm not actually speaking to him appropriately." Like, cause sometimes you just do things and you don't think of it. That's just your style. That's what you do. Uh-huh. But for his parents to know about it means that he had to have gone back after a class to tell them some of the things I had said. So maybe it was bothering him. And as parents do, they got to look after their kid's best interest. So they probably said, "Well, the next time you're in there, you tell him that he can't speak to you that way." So I had to hold my tongue and think, well, maybe I was actually in the wrong here. Even though it's your club and you want to say, look, if you don't want to train here, go somewhere else. But he was a really good student. So it was a really bad memory because I actually had to take stock in my methods of teaching and think maybe it's not actually the best way to do things.
What happened?
So I stopped. I kind of changed my format of teaching to a certain extent that would without crossing the line, I guess. So I wasn't saying anything, I'm assuming, to make him feel necessary to report it to his parents. And he stayed at the club, so I'm assuming something good came out of it.
I feel the need to just comment quickly on what that story Darren just told. The best instructors, the best martial artists, are the ones who are able to take feedback and think to themselves, maybe I'm wrong about what I'm doing. Maybe I need to re-examine something. Maybe I need to shift my perspective. And this doesn't extend just to martial arts. This is life lessons. The people who I respect the most are the people who are introspective that way and are able to take information and filter it through their own understanding of how they do things and alter how they do things. That's an incredible story. Thank you for telling that.
Jeez, that was just off the cuff too.
Hey, all right.
But yeah, I suppose when you put it in that context, because that's why it was kind of one of my worst memories, because it really made me stop and think. And I'm supposed to be running this club. Am I actually doing it wrong? And having to readjust, not necessarily your way of thinking, because as we all know, your way of thinking is partially instilled by the way you were taught. So it just stands to reason that if you were taught a certain way, you're going to follow a lot of them, unless you want to totally change the game and go, okay, I didn't like the way I was taught, therefore I'm going 100% different. So you do tend to follow the same disciplines in the same way that you were taught. So I think that was just the realization that maybe that's not the best way, and maybe we can keep some of those things, but we're going to have to alter it and stuff. So yeah, that was probably one of the worst ones, having to restock everything that you thought of as being normal up till there.
And your best
memory. Best memory. This is actually all right. I was training at a club, and they had, well, not the club, but the city I was living in, Victoria, they had a tough man competition. That's what it was called. That was just boxing. And I entered it myself one year and made it to the finals, and then lost by decision in the finals, which was a great experience. But they were running it every year after that. And in the gym, funny enough, I was with Jason, and Jason was entering the tough man competition that year. So I was coaching him. And there was another poor guy from the club that didn't have a coach. And he approached me and he said, "Is there any chance you can corner me?" And I said, "Well, for sure." But he ended up being in Jason's weight division. And I said, "Okay." I said, "If there's a conflict, like if both of you guys make it to the final, I'm going to have to go with Jason because I was already coaching him." It turned out Jason ended up losing, I think, his second fight. So that conflict of interest didn't come in. That guy, when we went in there, I coached him through, and he ended up winning, and we agreed because he got a big monetary prize at the end of the night, and everybody was all going back to this nightclub. And I said, "I'll coach you for free." And I said, "All I ask is that if you win, you buy me drinks at the nightclub all night." And he said, "Of course." And he ended up winning, and he stuck true to his word. But the funny thing about it was, you're kind of barking your orders. You're doing stuff. I'm not, like, hadn't done any kind of coaching to that level, and definitely as a boxer, which isn't my forte. But he said during the bar, he said he could hear my voice through his entire fights, and he followed every single thing that I had said.
Wow.
And he was saying that's what helped him win. Hey, now, I was thinking that at the time.
Give us a little snapshot of some of the snippets of the things you said. Like, what? Just off the top of your head, the thing.
Punch him! Punch him!
Yeah, exactly.
No, one of the things.
Use your boxing skills.
I remember when I was going, the guy that was coaching me, one of the things he had said was, "If I think you have someone in danger," during all the training, when you're doing, say, a 2-minute round or whatever, at the end of the last 10 seconds, the coach will yell out, "Last 10 seconds, and you're supposed to just empty the gas tank, kind of thing. Yeah. It's just because you know it's the last 10 seconds. You do it in even aerobics class and stuff. He had said that in my thing, and the idea was, if you think you got someone hurt, he yells out "last 10 seconds, and that means you empty the gas tank because he sees that you got him hurt. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't finish him, now you're done because the next round's going to be hell. Exactly. But that was one of the things that I took from someone coaching me. And I saw him, he had this guy in trouble, and he started to back off. And I just yelled out, "Last 10 seconds, go for it." And it was nowhere near the last 10 seconds.
Right.
There was probably a
2 minutes.
Good 50 seconds left or whatever. And he went in, and he just emptied the gas tank and dropped your man, and then he won that fight. So that was just kind of one of the things. It wasn't something that I made up. I had picked it up from somebody else along the way, passed it on. He actually heard me. He listened. He did it. And he ended up winning. So it was kind of a good feeling that, like, you actually coach someone to a winning thing. He trained at the club I was at, so it wasn't like I just met him on the street and said, "I'll coach you." Like, so I did know him. He knew me. So I think that was a really good memory. I remember walking away that night having free drinks all night thinking, yeah, that was really good. That was a good day.
Damn right it was a good memory.
Okay, that Darren was the first one in the second round, right? So I guess we go to Len now.
I can remember your question now.
I know. I had to write them down.
Having come on your martial arts path, when you look back now, the expectation of what you went in with to the style that you chose originally, looking back on it now, did it fulfill what you wanted? Did it leave holes, or did it just spark an interest for more of other stuff?
Wow.
And I'm going to pick Bob. No, Bob, you got picked on first last one. Darren, go for it.
I started when I was a little kid, so I had no expectations. I didn't know anything. I didn't know other arts. I don't even know what other arts existed. I watched Bruce Lee movies. I thought karate was the same as what Bruce Lee was doing. I didn't know that there was different styles. So I had no expectations. I just went in and did my thing. If I was looking back, it kind of goes with what I was saying earlier. I think it just sparked a lot of things. The town we grew up in, from what I remember as I was growing up, there wasn't a lot of other choices. Karate was pretty much all you had, or at least that's all I knew at the time. Mm-hmm. So had there been other schools there, probably I would have got involved in other martial arts and just kind of picked whatever you thought was best or whatever you were most interested in. when I was kind of reached a certain plateau, I felt that no, I wasn't getting everything that I wanted to get out of it, but I was happy with what I did get out of it, and I just moved on to other clubs and other arts, and just to this day, still trying to get stuff out of everything I can. So going back, no, it goes back to I wouldn't have changed anything. I had no expectations going in, and when expectations didn't come to fruition, I just went somewhere else and sought them there. And it's just like a continuous kind of growing process.
Mitch, I'm kind of on the same page as Darren. When I started in the martial arts, I didn't start because I wanted to take the martial arts. I started because I was out partying one night, and Bob goaded me and guilted me into going up to the club. He it was a Friday night. I was out all drinking and being ridiculous, and we were both living with our folks at the time. And Bob woke me up at like 7 o'clock and said, "Hey, come up to the club." And I'm like, I'm not getting up to go. No, that's not a thing. And he kept bugging me. And I said, "Look, if you leave me alone, I'll go up Monday." And he went, "Okay." And he was gone. So I went up Monday. My motivation to go to the club had nothing to do with my interest in the martial arts. My interest in the martial arts was non-existent. I was capitulating to my brother's pressure to go to the martial arts. I fell in love with it as I did it. So my expectations grew with my experience in having done it. So to answer your question, no, there was no disappointment because I didn't have any expectations going in. I always come at it from a perspective of I know nothing about this, so I have no expectation in it, and I just let my love of it either grow or not grow. I've done martial arts I don't really like, and I've done martial arts that I will love forever, and my expectation kind of grows relative to my experience. I know that's a boring and disappointing answer, but that's all I've got.
I never said it was boring.
I did.
Disappointing. Bob.
Yeah, sorry about this, but what's his name? Who's that guy who's
Mitch Maxine.
Son?
No, oh, so Darren.
What Darren said is perfect, and I can't add to it. And so to cut down on time, I'm going to say that's it. Sorry. Sorry about that.
Hey, look, there's no manual for right answers and wrong answers.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, well, since I had to answer my own question, now you can
exactly
answer
my own question. I knew that was coming. I'll just say I did answer my own question the last time as well. Anyway, when I went in, I was a late starter. I didn't start in my late teens, I suppose. And I had seen a lot of friends doing it, so I did have a bit of an expectation that I wanted to be good at this. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would make it all the way to black belt, and I never in any dream that I believe I would do it as a career. The expectations I had, I fulfilled them beyond what I wanted, but it also opened the door of, Jesus, there's so much I don't know, and there's so much inadequate what I've learned, and there's so much more out there. So I'm not saying I'm disappointed, but it has definitely whet my appetite, like Darren, to keep going and to keep trying to experience more and learn more. And
how old and are you, Lenny?
I'm 50.
Okay, good luck with all that.
Hey. Dude, I ain't slowing down.
I'm 59 and I am so slowing
I'm
down.
Slowing down.
You know what Clint Eastwood says to that one? When he was 90 years of age or 80 years of age, they asked him, you know, what are you doing tomorrow for your birthday? He says, I'm making a new movie. And he said, how do you get your inspiration? And he said, when I wake up in the morning, I don't let the old man in the door. And that's the way I wake up every day.
Well, that's why I do these podcasts.
that's why I run 12 miles every day.
Well, yeah, so answering my own question, it surpassed any expectation I ever had, but it also made me realize there are elements of it that I wished it was more, and that's why I keep looking at other stuff. Next question, next person.
All right, Bob, you're up.
All right, here it is. I don't know whether to say if you were on a desert island or if you were consigned to purgatory and you could only practice one technique for eternity, what would it be?
Oh, dear God.
No.
Lenny.
Wait. Which style?
Two-handed.
European.
Shoto wank.
I'm sorry, Bob. I'm sorry.
Shoto wank. Don't edit that out. That's priceless.
Shito wank.
Wadu rank.
Shito wank.
Okay, sorry.
All right, Bob, you're choosing the order of who's answering.
All right. Okay, let's go first, Darren.
See, the funny thing is, we were just talking about age a second ago. There would have been techniques that I would have loved to have continuously performed, but I'm not quite able to do them the same way now, and I certainly wouldn't want to be on a desert island for the rest of my life, slowly deteriorating. So, like, it'd be good if you picked a technique that you got better at as your years on the island.
Presumably practice continued. Does that?
Yeah, but not if, like, let's say I like backflips. Or whatever it was with some sort of wheel kick involved. And it's like, yeah, that'd be great, but I'm pretty sure it's going to diminish as time goes on. So I don't know if that's the best one to pick. One technique.
We got to get some young guys on this one.
Yeah.
Hey.
Sorry, Lenny. Once you hit 50, you're 50. Over. Sorry,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Half a century.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ponder this for a second. So just
go on to Lenny.
No, he can't. No, hang on. He didn't let anybody else ponder his question. Yeah.
It's a single technique, or can you pick a kata or something, or just one technique?
One kata is fine.
Oh, well, geez. I'd pick a kata that had, like, loads of techniques in it. That would entertain me.
See, I would.
Darren's giving a politician's answer.
Yeah. I every technique is going to get boring after a while if that's the only thing you can practice. There's techniques that I enjoy practicing because I don't have to, so I just enjoy it. But if that was all you could do, once again, that would probably take the fun out of it. So it becomes a kind of redundant question almost. I think it's just going to have to be a punch, just in whatever degree. If it has to be a front punch, okay. If you can mix it up and use it as a jab or a cross or a hook or an uppercut, it's still a punch. I would pick that because probably the punch, you can be the most diverse out of it. You can use it as a block if you have to. If it's deflecting, you can use it as an attack. So I think there's more you can play with on a punch than any other technique off the top of my head. So that's my answer.
Lenny.
I'm going to go a little bit left field here. We spoke earlier on about, you know, practicing stuff solo and working lines and so on. So I'm going with the whole thing. I'm on a desert island, so there has to be a practical situation for this. So all my strikes, kicks, punches, elbows, but I'm going to put them to good use. I need to build a shelter and I need to get fire, so I got to break wood. So there's... And also, if I'm invaded by a gang of cannibals, I can still defend myself. So how about that one? No. All my strikes, yeah. Like what Darren says, punch it. Because, I mean, kata's one strikes. Thing. Yes. Well, no, yeah. That sounds... Yeah, okay. That's, yeah.
Well, you're only allowed one.
All my strikes.
He only has one.
I only need one.
I choose all of them.
It's a hell of a strike.
the five finger death punch.
Cramps and diarrhea.
I would. Oh, Christ, Bob. You really came at us with this one, didn't you? For me, it would be a kata, which we just call a form six, but there's about 72 moves in it, and it's really intricate. And you're absolutely wiped at the end of it, but it's a lot of practical stuff in it. There's a lot of tension in it, there's a lot of explosive stuff in it. So it gives a nice mix of. A various skill, so form six for me from the traditional Kenpo syllabus.
Actually, can I interject just for a second? Because I just thought of something. I was just joking about Dim Mak. That'd be cool if it was an actual thing. But if there was something, there was a technique, say, like, meditation isn't really a technique, but if there was something that I didn't know how to do that was definitely possible, but it actually took pretty much a lifetime to perfect... That would be the ultimate technique to have on a desert island. So if you were trying to reach transcendence, or you were trying to astral travel, or just clear your mind completely in a meditative form, that would be the cool technique to work on, because you have all that time to do it, and it would take you forever to get to it. And once you actually did achieve it, if that actually happened... Oh, shit, the rest of your days on the desert island are going to be awesome, because you've just achieved what you just spent awesome. However long to do.
That means you've learned to use the Force and you're now a Jedi.
Something like that, yeah. If I can't think of something like... But there are obviously techniques that do take kind of a lifetime to do. Yeah. Just ask Mr. Tillman or whatever his name is there. Dillman, isn't it?
Dillman.
Yeah. Dildo. Dildoman.
George Dildo.
That's
George.
Well, that's his name, George Dillman.
Last name, Dildo. First name?
George.
It was next on that one.
That's a good
question. It's got to be Mitch Reedy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's me. Only because it is the universally most poorly performed basic technique. Sidekicks, and specifically shuffling and thrusting sidekicks. I could do them forever. I love the kick. I love the technique. And it hurts my heart how badly they're done.
See, my problem is I perfected that at an early age. So it'd be a waste of my time on the island.
this time on the island is wasted.
I bow down to your your. Oh, that's awesome,
Mitch. If you'd have been in my dojo last week, you would have wept. That's all I'm saying.
for the future.
I weep in absentia for the future. Goddamn. All right,
Bob, you got to answer your own.
Am I left? All right.
Yep, you're the only one left, Bob.
What's the question? One
desert island single technique.
It's a tie, I think, between an Aikido throw.
I was just going to say, if you pick a throw, who the fuck are you going to work on that?
Not you.
You don't like to sit down.
How can you practice a throw by yourself on a desert island?
Well, actually, you can. It's judo uchikomis, except with Aikido. So give me a break.
Uchikomis aren't.
Have you ever tried? Have you ever
Gucci Gucci?
Yeah.
Yes,
Mitch. Mitch, I've seen you do Aikido techniques with no partner, so don't give me this bullshit.
Yeah, but no, I
not any drink taken there.
I do the form of the Aikido technique, but I don't do it because I'm not throwing somebody.
That's all I'm talking about. And you're absolutely right. I should have a partner there. I'll fashion one out of palm trees and fronds.
Hey, there could be chimpanzees or monkeys on the island.
Hey, monkey.
Well, if there is, I'm changing my technique.
I'll train him with fruits and vegetables.
I have this vision of Bob flipping a monkey.
Every time he performs properly, I give him a little bit of banana. It'll work. I've got 10 years. God damn it.
Banana being a euphemism, of course.
Oh, no. Monkey.
And there on the far side of the island, Mitch is trying to teach him a sidekick.
I had another goddamn martial art technique in mind, but I can't remember it right now. And we're running over time. Next.
Why do you think there's some sort of time limit on this?
Oh, right. Okay, well, why don't we pause while I try to think of the fucking thing that I forgot? You guys go ahead. It was some martial art. What's those things where you use your arms and legs to fight people? It's a thing.
Epilepsy.
All right. What comes to mind, which I don't think was my original thing, but it was not a shuffling in sidekick. It's a hopping in sidekick. It's a hopping in thrusting sidekick, which was one of my favorite techniques to teach, and was really hard to teach. People didn't seem to pick it up very well, but it was one of my favorites. So I'll default to that. Okay.
Okay. So.
Oh wait! No, I got it.
Oh,
I remember.
Dear.
I remember what I was going to say.
Everybody on the edge of your seat. Bob speaking again.
Shut the fuck up.
This better be good.
I would fashion a makiwara, and I would do reverse punches for the rest of my life.
Son of a bitch.
That's not bad. That's not
God
bad.
God damn it. I like that one. I love that. Yeah. I love doing that.
I think I'm going to change my answer.
Change my answer.
Well, here, the question never said anything about fashion and stuff. I might have had a different answer if I had some props.
Hey, two minutes ago, Bob's fashioning a monkey.
I'm flipping a monkey. Now I'm fashioning a monkey. I'm on a desert island. Give me a break. I got all the time in the world.
Then I'm gonna use the bones of that gorilla to fashion my makiwari board.
Take that, gorilla, for biting me.
Trying to flip me.
Man, I don't think I want to be in this island.
Yeah, it's degenerating already.
that's an evil island. Don't go there.
It's a sad and terrible island. All right. Okay.
All right, so I'm done, I think. I think I'm...
Okay, this is it. This is the last question, folks.
Whoa! Nice.
Whoa!
We can get out of this. We can get out of this purgatory.
We can get off this island.
Okay, so forgetting about teaching, there is no context to this question other than the martial arts. What is your proudest moment in your history of your time as a martial artist?
Fucking hell.
Let's go with Bob. The monkey? It's the monkey.
I was taking a drink, I swear. Holy shit. Oh, I remember I was thinking about this a couple episodes ago, and then Mitch, you said something, and I said, God damn it, I should have thought of that. What was it? It was a good one. It was a good one. Proudest.
Dude, I can't remember 10 minutes ago. Forget about a couple episodes ago.
Something where somebody did something really good.
No. Come on, man.
I felt good about it.
That was me. I did something really good.
That was the monkey. The monkey did something really good.
The monkey performed adequately.
I'm proud of you, monkey.
Could we repeat this at 5 o'clock?
Come on, Bob.
Oh, God damn it. Proudest.
Okay.
In default, because I'm drunk and I can't think of, I can't think straight. In default, I'm going to say Blake's black belt gray.
Really?
Which is an easy out because there's tons of other stuff that I just haven't thought about.
Proudest. That's interesting. I feel remarkably proud of Blake, but I don't feel proud of myself in that circumstance.
I do. I think I went a long way toward making him proud of himself. That's why.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, fair enough. Lenny.
Oh, God.
Not so easy, is it?
No, it's not. It's a bit hard. I was hoping he'd come to me last, give me more time to stall. I think watching maybe the most timid kid that you know who set foot in the dojo was absolutely petrified, and watched them walk out on the floor and perform a kata in front of everyone and seeing the joy in their eyes and parents and family and everybody else.
Okay,
I was instrumental in that. So
I'm going to do something that I shouldn't do, but I'm going to do it anyway. You're not allowed to choose something that has to do with your influence on someone else.
Oh,
something that what? You... Yeah. So I'm we're going to start... We're going to start this over again. It can't be something related to your influence. It's time for everybody to actually look.
Oh,
wait, hang on a second.
Step up. This is important. Be proud of themselves. Okay.
This is right. This is something that I've noticed about all of our stories. Very few of them have to do with how happy we are about ourselves and how proud we are of ourselves. It's always how impressed we are and how happy we are about people we've influenced. This question, and we're going to start it over with Bob, your proudest moment of something that you've done in the martial arts. Bob.
Okay, again, I attribute this to my lack of memory, and forgive me if I'm leaving out hugely significant events in my life, but...
Like the monkey.
I'm going to say... back, monkey. The night of my Shodan grading, when I told my instructor... Specifically, the quote was, "If I don't deserve it, I don't want it." That was a turning point for me, like conscience-wise, in that I realized that it was true, that I don't want something I don't deserve.
Okay, Darren, go. Oh no, sorry, Lenny, go.
Opening the doors to a full-time dojo and still having it operational.
Yeah,
7 years on.
Yeah.
And still having the biggest interest in it. Yeah, I have to say. That's totally self-indulgent, but yeah. Be able to turn around and say, yeah, I did it.
That's what he wanted. He wanted self-indulgence.
Exactly. The question is self-indulgence. So there you go.
So yeah.
Nice. All right, Darren.
I can only think of one that when you started, it's not so much proud, it's more just happy and elated. And I seem to remember telling this story before, so I don't know if something came up on one of the previous podcasts that led to this, but there was a tournament in Victoria, and it wasn't just a karate tournament. It was a martial arts tournament. So there was taekwondo guys there. There was grappling. There was full contact. There was kata. There was weapons. All this shit. And the most winning competitor got a check for like $1,000 or something like that. And I remember being out there, and Jason was out there, and we were with a bunch of people. We were all partying, and we knew we were going to the tournament. And I said, drinks are on me tonight because I'm going to win that prize. And they're like, but like, you don't do all this. I said, no, I don't, but nobody does. So it's, I'm not the best in anything by any stretch of the imagination what I do, but I've always loved to dabble in things generally. And normally, whenever you join a new club, you're the low man on the totem pole, regardless of how much training you've had somewhere else, because it's not done the same way. But I've dabbled in enough, I thought, no, I'm going to enter. I went in like kata, point sparring, full contact, grappling, weapons, and also at the time, I think I was like 38, so there was an over 35 category, so I jumped in all the same shit over 35. So obviously I had an advantage over somebody that was less than 35, because by the nature of their age, they couldn't have entered those two things. Now, it was only kata and sparring, I think, in the over 35s. But I entered everything I could with the little knowledge I had of each thing, and I placed in everything, whether it was... I don't think I took first place in any one category, but I placed at least third in all the categories, and that was enough to get all the points to win the most winning competitor. So it's like, technically, if you looked at it, I lost in every division.
But thanks for enough. The $1,000, yoink!
And I, true to my word, I took the people that came along with me, and we went out for drinks, and I just paid for everything that night. And it was just like, it wasn't necessarily proud, but I was so elated that I had set that goal and said, I am going to win that. And I blustered some of the things. I remember looking back at my kata thinking, I shouldn't have got third in that. But it just worked out. The weapons, I had no idea on weapons. I went on YouTube, and I didn't like any of the katas that were on there. So I made up my own kata. I took some of the moves from various katas that I saw, pieced them together. Wow. That was my weapons kata, and I just went from there. So it ended up being a great day and a great night. I think, as I said, I don't think it's the most proudest moment, but it was a pretty good feeling.
Is that it? Are we done?
Mitch has to answer that one.
No, we still got our Jesus. So I want to hear other answers.
All Jesus right. Christ.
Okay. My proudest moment, 5-6 years ago now, I went to Ireland. I don't want to make this a long, drawn-out story. My whole motivation for going to Ireland and entering that tournament was because I was getting on in years. I think I was 55 or 56 at the time. No, 55. 54 or 55. And I'd never competed internationally. I'd never competed outside of this little bubble that I exist within in terms of our martial arts experience. And this opportunity came up, and I thought, you know what, I'm curious, and I wouldn't mind a trip to Ireland. What the hell, let's go for it. So I went in the thing, and I qualified for the team, and off we went to Ireland. And I took, doesn't matter, the moment that...
Does matter, it matters.
Yeah, you got to tell it, because since you said...
Now let's remember that I didn't compete in this tournament, so whatever he won was reflective of the fact right. that I wasn't
you
in the tournament.
You would have won if you were there.
Darren, do I have to bring up the last time we did?
I was just going to fucking say. I was going to say, history does not indicate that I would have stood a chance anyway. But if I was on a desert island, this would be one of my thoughts.
You know, it's funny because I competed in kata and sparring, just regular point sparring. There was like 9 different divisions to compete in, but I just did point sparring and kata. The guy I competed against for the final in kata, I respect this guy a lot. I talked to him a little bit at the tournament. I follow him on Facebook. He's the head of, if I'm not mistaken, the South African World Kickboxing Association, the South African chapter. He's a very well-known guy in those circles. And he took first, and I took second in kata. And in sparring, I took first, and another guy from Canada took second. And to be honest, I value that silver way more than I value that gold. But to answer the question, when I won the gold in sparring, this gentleman I beat, he got silver. they had a whole podium thing set up where you'd stand first, second, third, like in the Olympics. It was my first impression was it's nonsense. But when you're standing up on that podium and you're holding a Canadian flag and they play the Canadian national anthem, I will never forget that moment. That I don't know if I would call it my proudest moment, but I would certainly call it a very emotionally, surprisingly emotionally moving moment. So that's my answer to that question.
I remember that.
That's right. You were there for a couple of days of that, right?
Yeah.
I was
there for the whole tournament, basically. I remember watching the whole thing and everybody fighting, and it was quite entertaining.
It was entertaining, and I've got a lot of bad memories about that, but I've got a lot of really, really fond memories of that experience as well. So,
are we done?
We're done. Okay, before we go, we're done, guys. Thanks so much, but I want to go around the table. Final comments before we wrap it all up. Bob.
Jesus, this has been fun. How long is it? Almost 3 hours. No.
It's not almost 3 hours.
2 hours.
2 hours.
Almost 2 hours.
Like the same as every other podcast.
Nothing. Okay. Nothing. This has been the same as every other podcast. That's awesome.
Oh, good. I can just keep posting the same podcast over and over.
No, what a hoot. Feel free to invite these two gentlemen back again. It's fun talking to them.
Darren.
Yeah, I think it was what I reiterated when you asked why we do the podcast. The same comment applies, and I think part of that comment, I think was something Lenny said about picking up extra things. So it's like when I log off here, that I won't be going to bed. That I'll be probably sitting up for an extra hour pondering a lot of things that I've heard. I don't give a shit what I said, but I'm pondering what I've heard in the last 2 hours that make me kind of question some of the things I thought prior to the podcast and what I might take away from it. So this is like, I think I'll get more out of this than the listeners.
Lenny?
I really, really enjoyed the spontaneity of this evening. That there was no preparation. I thought it was excellent. Really loved it. You know, definitely food for thought the odd time if we're back on. And I'd love, as you know, I love being on here and talking to you guys. I throw a little curveball in every once in a while. Yeah, don't give us any clue what's coming up and just throw it out at the start. And
Lenny, what's food for thought?
Food for thought.
Thank you for talking English.
Well, I'd also like to add that no monkeys were harmed in the making of this.
Oh, hey! Bob makes no such claims. Okay, folks, on that note, we're going to bring this podcast to a close. I really want to thank all my guests this week, especially
Bob.
No, actually, not to minimize Bob's participation, but I know Lenny and Darren are staying up quite late. They're 5 hours behind us. It's like ahead midnight. Oh, yes, ahead of us. Sorry. Yeah, it's like midnight in Ireland right now. So I know it's a pain for those guys to be on the podcast.
No, never pain, never pain.
And thank you guys so much. And Bob, as always, love having you on, man. It's awesome. So we're going to sign
thanks
out.
Thanks again. Thanks again.
Once again, if you've got any comments, leave them on the No Mind Podcast Facebook page or my personal Facebook page, or send me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Thanks so much, folks, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.
Peace out.